Thank you for listening to Lawford, the podcast about the village of Lawford in northeast Essex and the surrounding area. Lawford, the podcast, is brought to you by Lawford Parish Council with the aim to share what the council is up to and to highlight some of the amazing people, events and facilities in our area. Good day. Today I'm delighted to be joined by Dean Smith, fitness instructor and proprietor of Fitness at Summers Park, which is a fabulous local gym in Lawford, which we're actually sat in this morning. And first I start with a good morning, Dean.
Good morning, everybody. How are you?
Good. So we usually start these chats, Dean, with the kind of the Providence story and how you ended up in Lawford. But actually, your story is a little bit different because you started out in Lawford, then you went away for a little bit, and then you came back. So maybe do you want to tell our audience a little bit about that story?
Yeah, sure. I was born and bred here, actually, Merivale Road, and lived here. I went to school locally, worked at the land settlements down in Ely and Manningtree sheet metal work. A couple of shops, and then I decided to move away and went up north, up to Halifax, West Yorkshire. Done a lot of security and door work up there. Worked abroad, Tenerife, Cavos, Ibiza for 4 years, working with MTV doing private security work.
Oh, wow, you've been properly around.
Azerbaijan. Yeah. I was out there for a year, and the States, I was out there for 2.5 years doing some work with Slipknot, amongst other bands, and then was in China. I was out there for 8 years, corporate language training, working for HP, Citibank, Hewlett-Packard, a couple of other companies, teaching English in universities as well. And then eventually I think I came back here in, I think it was 2015, 16, and found myself back here again.
Oh, wow, that is a proper whistle-stop tour of world destinations.
The world in
interesting experiences. Maybe we jump into one or two of those. What carried you to Azerbaijan? That seems...
That's the one that most people pull up on, because this was in about 2003, before it was kind of on the map, because now there's got the Formula One there. And back in the day, it was quite an unheard of place. I had a business partner who was in Azerbaijan from Baku. His dad... an airline company there, and I was training with him up in Halifax. He's a kickboxer, and I was training him in strength training, and he invited me out to Azerbaijan for his wedding, which I went out to, and as we were talking afterwards, he said, you know, we should do something out here with your music background, because I've been working in MTV in Ibiza for 3 years. I knew a lot of DJs and a lot of promotions. And although it's a Muslim country, there's quite a lot of Westerners that work in the oil industry. They kind of tend to frequent nightclubs and bars, and they can drink in those separate areas. So we thought about opening up a nightclub and bringing a bit of dance music to Azerbaijan for the Western people that work there.
Yeah.
Great idea. We had a smashing opening. Everything was going well until the climate slightly changed. And then, I don't know if you remember at the time, there were a lot of kidnappings going on in the Middle East, and people getting beheaded online and everything.
Okay.
That period.
A bit too punchy.
So, you know, all of a sudden we had a nightclub with no Westerners, because now the embassies couldn't let them out of the compound.
Oh, Lord. Okay.
So all of a sudden I had a nightclub with three people sharing a Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
Maybe this is not the right time, so we had to close it down and left the country. So
when you write down the business model and you put the risks,
we opened this three weeks before COVID.
Yeah,
it's
again,
always that unexpected thing that you just can't plan for.
Yeah. Well, so this is an interesting random. I hadn't anticipated going down this road, but MTV, you were doing security, but interacting with some of the DJs.
I was working out at Cafe Mambo Promotions, and the guy who was managing it at the time, Miguel, asked me if I'd do the meet and greet for the Done and Dusted crew. I mean, these are guys that went on to do the Super Bowls. Hamish Hamilton is a world leader in Azure broadcast now.
Yeah.
And he asked me to do the security for the MTV meet and greet at Cafe Mambo. So I'd done that for them the first year. They invited me back to do it the second year. And a little backstory there, I didn't have a ticket for the event that night, and I went up to Hamish and I said, look, you know, is there any other work I can do for you? And he said, yeah, go and see Carney, he's doing the meet and greet and the live feeds, you can help him. So I went out to see Carney Turner, a really good friend of mine, and I was holding the light rig. We were doing live interviews with DJs, and because I'd been out in the country for several years, I knew a lot more people than him.
Okay.
And everyone would go, hey, Dino, how are you? You know, and Carney went, listen, mate, you know more people than me. Why don't you do the interviews and I'll hold the light rig? You've done all this before, haven't you? Thinking I was well, what's the worst that can happen?
Yeah.
Say yes and see what happens. So I said, oh, yeah, no problem. Grab the mic went in and interviewed all these DJs and producers, and I never looked back. And at the end of the night, I said, look, I've never done this before, mate. He said, mate, you're a natural. Stick with it. And that led me to working with Rapture TV, Club of Vision, and back with MTV the following year. So follow your dreams and just say yes.
Yeah,
what's
the best that can happen? And I guess because that is a bit of the story in terms of, because it's quite, to go from Loughford Life to suddenly taking on all these different locations around the world. What motivated the travel lust, or what do you think was the kind of catalyst for wanting to?
For me, I mean, it's quite a sad story that we haven't really touched on yet. But I got married initially, and my son died 3 hours after he was born in my arms.
Oh, Lord.
I was only 20, and that took me a couple of years. I've been in a very dark place, and I couldn't really get myself out of that. I mean, me and my wife at the time had split up as well. I lost my job, my son. It was a horrible time, and I kind of made peace with myself. And thought my way of dealing with it was, if I don't live a life colourfully and do all the things I want to do, I'll live my life for him that he couldn't have a life. Does that make sense?
It did to me at the time.
And I thought, I'm just going to do all the things I've ever wanted to do and just say, let's just go for it. And with that, I quit my job and went off. And
it's amazing when you embrace the world.
That was my catalyst.
Things work out, don't they?
They do. That's a classic example of turning a negative into a positive, and negative things happen. But how you deal with it is the most important thing. It wasn't easy, but it was better than the alternative I was looking at. So with that, I strove forward and never think failure again. If you can get through that, you can get through anything.
Yeah.
And that's the
proper life experience. Mm. And then, obviously, China is the biggest one of those stretches, and that's one that has the most kind of indelible mark in your life, because I know your partner is Chinese. Help me out, because that was a brave thing to go to China. That must be 20 years ago, was it?
Yeah, I mean, that was just before the Olympics, 2007.
Okay.
And I was working for Marks & Spencer's up in Pudsey at the time. I had a great career. I mean, everything was going well for me. And bearing in mind, I'd already done the Ibiza thing. I'd backpacked across Australia in 2004, done the Azerbaijan thing. So I was quite good to taking risks. And I was in a very settled job and a very settled position. And I mean, I can remember it as though it was yesterday. I was reading a book called The Alchemist by Paulo Coelho, about following your dreams. And I remember going to work one day and I just literally stopped in my tracks and thought, is this really it for me now? Is this my life? Because it was settled. And I thought, I'm sure I've got one big push left in me. And I've always wanted to travel and teach English. I thought about this years ago and I thought, I'd love to do that. Where could I do that? And China was on the map because of the Olympics. I always fancied Russia at the time, and Venezuela, South America, always fancied that. And I thought, let's just put the feelers out and see what comes back. So I applied for a few positions, had a look into the TEFL market, teaching English as a foreign language, and I got 3 job offers. And I thought, that's worth having a look at it, really. Yep. So I looked into it a bit more, got a qualification online, got my basic TEFL qualification, and applied, and got offered a job in China and one in Russia. And I thought, at China, no one's ever been there.
Yeah.
Let's go there, because what a trip that will be.
Yeah.
So I decided to apply, took the job, and the funny story is that they actually offered me a job in Hebei near Beijing, and when I actually got off at the airport, I was met at the airport by a lady with my name on a board. She spoke no English, I spoke no Chinese. This was Friday afternoon, and I followed her onto the train. We took off, and I knew Hebei from Beijing was about 4 hours on train.
Okay.
I was on that train for about 18 hours. Gone through the night, through the day, and no one speaking English, and I'm thinking something's wrong here.
Yeah.
And all the pictures that they'd sent me online of my beautiful university, when I looked out of the window, it was like a post-apocalyptic Mad Max. And it looked nothing like where I was supposed to go, and I'm thinking, where am I going here, And the train kept going. I was sleep-deprived. I had no idea where I was, and eventually the train stopped, and she ushered me out the door. And I got off onto this station. I looked up, and in English it said Linfen. And I thought, what the hell is Linfen? And this guy came up to me and said, welcome to Linfen. And I said, where's Linfen? He went, Shanxi, which is near Xi'an.
Okay.
That's in central China.
Okay.
I'm thinking, mate, I'm thousands of miles away.
This is a big country.
And it was the wrong university they sent me to. And I got there after all this travel, and I got some books, and I had a shower, and thought, maybe fate brought me here. Maybe I should go, because they offered to put me on a train and send me back to Hebei. And the first person I met that day was this lady who walked past, and I said, good morning. She said hello. And that was Grace, my wife. So if I hadn't gone there, I'd have never met my wife. And that is a true story.
Wow.
That is a true story.
That is sliding forward moment in life.
Indeed, my friend. Yeah. That definitely is it. Yeah.
And how did you find China? Because culturally, you know, politically, economically, it's obviously it's had an incredible growth period. Did you find it? You know, and obviously the language is a big impediment right, to interacting. So how did you find, I guess, life in China?
Life was, I was working in university to start with, teaching postgraduate English majors, so I was quite insulated there. They looked after me very well. Plus, I had Grace, who was my best friend at the time, so she looked after me as well. But I met a lot of good friends that took me out, and it's extremes. You get extremely nice, warm, kind people, and extremely unnice, unwarm, not very friendly people as well. But you get that everywhere, but it's almost amplified there. And The biggest thing for me was the amount of people. It's just so busy.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, on the scale of where we live now, it's just, you know, and it was just so busy, and there was so much going on, and the pace was just so quick. It took me so long to get used to that. But culturally, I loved it. I mean, it's such an amazing, interesting culture, and there's so much to learn there.
Yeah.
But academically, the people there are just off the charts. They work so hard because there's so much challenge and there's so much competition for them.
Yeah.
So I really enjoyed it. I mean, it certainly made me, you know, how I am. It made me appreciate life back home as well.
But at some point, you came out of the academics, did you, and you started working it back?
Yeah, I used to work for a company called English First, Yingfor, and they used to do corporate language training in IBM and other businesses. And I got approached by Citi and said, "Look, do you want to work for us directly?" So I went to Shanghai, got some training, got offered a job in Citi, started up a soft skills program for them in Dalian, where we were living, and done that for 2.5 years, and plus had a consultancy business at the weekend. So I was working hard, but not many foreigners like myself stay there for long. They only stay for a year. I was there for 7, got used to the culture. And
did you pick up some of the language, or is that
too much? Yeah, quite a bit. But again, I mean, my Chinese wasn't that great. But the thing is, if I was actually banned from speaking Chinese in class, because if I knew I could speak Chinese, they'd revert back to their language to explain things to me. So I knew a little bit. It was a great fun, great experience. I mean, I was out there when the earthquake struck as well, and that was something else, right in the middle of that one. So we were in the middle of that disaster as well.
Damaged properties. And
yeah, I mean, we were only about 1,000 miles away, but we felt the aftershock. I've never been in anything like that in my life.
Very alien to us.
I thought I was going to faint, and all of a sudden I realised it was a ground moving, not me. But we got together and raised some money for the Red Cross, and you know, done our bit, and it was a great experience. I mean, I really loved it being there. No regrets at all, and it certainly gave me a different perspective on life. So.
And at some point, as you mentioned, you went from Grace being your friend to being your partner and to being your
wife. I've done well there. She's been pivotal in my life. She really is. Yeah. Polar opposites, but she's been there.
Yeah, yeah.
She's great.
And at some point, you make the journey back across to the UK.
Yeah.
And I understand Grace had significant challenges with the Home Office at a certain point.
It was on the immigration. I mean, we came here on a spouse visa, which was great, and this is a really long story, and a lot of people know this because this went nationwide on ITV, Look East. We got interviewed by a lot of people.
Yeah.
We came here on a spouse visa. Grace was working full-time.
Does that not entitle you to work, to live in?
Yeah, she's got a work visa and a spouse visa. Yeah. But when we went to reapply, unfortunately, the company we used made a hack up on the paperwork. They gave us the wrong information. We applied for the visa and the Home Office threw it out. Once they throw out the visa application, you've got 21 days to be deported.
Okay.
And she was 7 months pregnant. So you can imagine where I am with my mindset now. Oh my God, this is the first time I've had a child since what happened previously. And all of these ghosts came out of the woodwork again. So we had about 3 weeks to try and get people behind us and reapply, which we did. They rejected it again. Now we're thinking, you know, what the hell's going on here? We've been given wrong information by this immigration company that we hired.
Yeah.
We even got the MP involved. We got the local councillor, Carlo, involved with us and, you know, gave us a hell of a lot of support. The company, the community really came together and supported us so much because she's working. I mean, that's the whole thing about come to the country, work, embrace the culture, which she did. You know, she speaks perfect English. She's an English major, working full-time, paying tax.
Yeah.
So eventually we got everybody behind us and we went and saw a really good lawyer, Sohan. Thank you so much, my friend. And he looked at it. We've got it sorted out, got the decision turned over, and we've been great ever since. But that was a real big hiccup. And we were looking at a deportated wife and my daughter, Amelia, being brought up in another country. So I couldn't go back to China without a work visa.
Yeah.
And by then I hadn't got a work visa because I'm in this country. We've got my mum here, and it was a terrible.
I can imagine. Yeah. Oh, obviously the stress of a baby coming, and then the stress of well, you know,
never a dull moment.
Exponential
never
stress.
A dull moment.
And somewhere in all of this, we haven't even talked about fitness yet, and your journey in it. And I say we're sat in the gym. The gym's really busy this morning. Lots of people getting active. But help us out a little bit about your journey in you obviously. I've always been enthusiastic, but at some point you go from enthusiasm to making it into a profession. So just help us out a little with that journey.
Well, for me, I mean, early on, I mean, I was bullied at school. I had a bit of a tough childhood, and I just thought back then, if I could make myself stronger on the outside, maybe it'd make the inside stronger. And I think a lot of people can relate to that initially with getting into this game. But I watched Pumping Iron. Pumping Iron, watched it with my dad at home, saw Mr. Schwarzenegger lifting, and I thought, man, I would love to be like that. So I ordered myself a set of dumbbells, and take care, Russ, and a poster. Started doing some curls at home in my bedroom, and a bull worker. I don't know if you remember the bull workers back in the late 80s, so we had a bull worker as well, and that's where I began, and then slowly started to progress it. I eventually started to get into my bodybuilding and powerlifting probably in the early 90s. Shortly after that, I moved up north and started to work with a lot of guys in the rugby, loads of doormen. I used to train as well. So I was just very enthusiastic, and I'm one of those guys that if I do something, I do it 100%. Yeah. I've done my research. I looked at the nutrition and the diet, and I was good at what I did. I mean, I knew a lot of exercises, and I got good results, and people would ask me to train them specifically. So I'd done that as a hobby, but got paid.
Yeah.
And I always had the dream of kind of being a personal trainer and doing my own thing, but still was in the bodybuilding and the powerlifting side of things. I carried this throughout everywhere I've been, through the States, through Azerbaijan, through China. I still trained. And as I got older, I noticed that my body didn't recover quite as quick as it did before. And I thought maybe I've missed the boat here. But then I thought, well, hold on, you know, there's a lot of people my age that probably need trainers my age that will relate a lot more to them than when I did when I was 20.
Absolutely.
So I took my qualification from a personal trainer into an exercise referral specialist. So I work with specific medical conditions. Also work with lots of local businesses and a couple of surgeons that we know as well. So from then on, it really just took off for me. And then I thought, you know, I'd really like to have my own facility because I was working out of another local gym.
Yeah.
The opportunity came up, Summers Park. We had a chat with Stephen Rose and a couple of other people that helped support us. And I said, this is what we want to do. And we decided to get heads down, and we opened this place just before COVID, 2020. Yeah.
And for anyone who hasn't been in, and the audio won't do it justice, but it's a stunning building, and it's a stunning location right in the heart of...
Yeah, this is beautiful. We love it here. And it's a very niche market that we serve as well. I mean, our oldest member is 86. Most of our members are in their 50s, 60s and 70s. 60% are ladies. And we work with hip replacements, knee replacements, asthma, obesity, depression, all of the, you know. Because normally a lot of places, especially a gym, is going to be quite intimidating.
Yeah.
People don't feel fit enough to go in. We're not like that. You just come in and have a look at yourself. Everybody gets on. Nice ambient atmosphere. And
Yeah. And you obviously have that, I guess, as you say, that niche and that professional knowledge to support people with additional needs, basically.
Yeah, I've been there myself. Everything hurts. It's not just the hair. So, everything hurts. So I can relate to that quite well. And obviously with the clients I have and with the experience as well, it certainly gives us a niche in the market there.
Got it. And you said a little bit earlier, you've had so many challenges in life, haven't you? But you get ready, you make all the investment to get this business open, and then within a couple of weeks, was it a couple of weeks you said?
I think it was a few weeks. I think January, February, we had the opening party in January. It seems so long ago now. February we opened. I think it was March or April we had to close for COVID, but the first one was so warm. It was such a...
Yes, it was.
It was a holiday because we thought this is a few weeks off, you know, because the skies were clear, the birds were singing. We had a little bit of time at home. I had time with my daughter and my wife, and, you know, the business was open. So we thought, well, great, a couple of weeks and we can relaunch again. Little did we know that throughout that year it would be start, stop. And then the last lockdown was, I think, 4 months, 5 months, a bit longer. So we lost Christmas and the New Year. And then eventually... just when the restrictions were going to be lifted again, because we've done a couple of interviews with Look East as well on ITV, we highlighted the gym and the hygiene. And then just as we opened again, we expected, and a lot of businesses did, the floodgates would open. It didn't happen. People were still very, very wary of even shaking hands.
Yeah.
You know, the space issue was written. So
well,
was,
the message had been amplified for so long.
100%.
You know, and then
everyone
and
was
then,
unclean.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And gyms were mentioned specifically as well. So even, I suppose, for at least 6, 7, 8 months after that, it was touch and go. And obviously the bills are still coming out. And
well, that's it. You're trying to start a business, isn't it?
Yeah, and you just got to keep your head down. Yeah. And just keep
Well, you've obviously got through it. And as I said, it's kind of a testament to what's going on here this morning. What does a typical day in the gym look like? What, you know, help me out.
Well, I'm normally up about 4 a.m. I get up early. I'm an early bird now.
Looking at a book by David Goggins, who he's a disciplined fitness
Yeah, well, David Goggins got me through lockdown. When the gym was shut, I'd come in every morning at 3:30, train for 4 hours a day, because I thought, although I can't train clients, I'll train myself, because everyone else is getting fat. Blaming it on lockdown.
I'm not going to do that.
So I came in at 3:30 every morning and trained for 4 hours while my daughter was asleep and my wife was at work at home. Then I'd go home and do my day. So I thought, that's just my way of proving to myself that, you know what, I'm not going to let this get me down.
Yeah.
So I use it as a positive.
Yeah.
So, so my normal day
still... That's some discipline to be able to do that.
I mean, what a waste of a facility like this if I don't.
Yeah.
So I'll get up at 4, have a coffee, get in here normally at 5. Prepare for my day with clients and my schedules. Normally open up about 5:45. Sometimes I have clients earlier than that because some commute.
Yeah. And it's a mix of personal training and just people using the gym as a...
I mean, we have members that come in and just use the gym themselves, but most people come and take some training with us because they've got specific issues. They're a little bit older. They need a bit more guidance. We want everyone to be safe. We spent a lot of money on the equipment as well, which is quite high tech. So it's good to give everyone an induction, show them how we work, so they feel happy and they'll get the results. I mean, the biggest problem in a lot of gyms, people go in and they go to the gym, but they don't actually know what they're doing. So we want to give them a real kind of fundamental understanding of why, how their body works, about going to failure, training safely with your rest, and more of an holistic approach. And the trainers help that no end. We've got 4 other trainers plus myself work here now. And we've all got a good client base, and it really works. But if you just want to come and use the gym and you know what you're doing, you're more than welcome to as well.
I hadn't appreciated the scale. You have four trainers working on
here. Yeah, myself, Sean, Freya, Robin, and Paul, who's here as well. And
we all have an active client
base. Indeed, we do.
And I guess maybe looking forward, I guess, what does the future look like?
Well, we've had a few thoughts. I mean, I love where we are now. I mean, would we open another one if we got the opportunity? I wouldn't say we wouldn't, but at the moment, we're definitely looking at other options or avenues for us. We thought about the option of maybe turning this into a training centre to train other personal trainers, which is something we may well look at in the future.
Okay.
Because getting the right qualification is one thing, but actually having the experience to take that and move forward is another. And a lot of places don't actually give you the experience. They just give you the qualification. Then they expect you to go out and learn.
Yeah.
But we wanted to do that slightly differently. So what we would like to do is possibly give our own qualification in the future of fitness as some part of qualification based out of here.
It's a really good idea.
Train the clients and train the trainers so they know what they're doing and they can go out and make their own career.
Yeah.
So that's something we're looking at. Also, possibility of working with other clinics and surgeons when they do post-operation hip and knee replacements. Once they've done the rehab, come to us, and then we'll kind of do a follow-on rehab, which we're starting to do as well.
So the grey matter is still whirling. You're obviously...
You know, sometimes, you know, you have a plan, as I've learned with my life, you have a plan A, and often you go on plan B and C. Just go with the flow, follow your dream, and eventually things will come right. You just never give up.
They're good closing words in themselves, but I guess this is obviously targeted at this is a very local community podcast. Is there any kind of words of encouragement, words of wisdom, or words of just motivation for, I guess, the community around us, and, you know, in terms of how they should think about fitness and wellness and maybe over the course of their life?
Well, you know, one of the biggest issues for most people that we see here is actually getting to the gym in the first place, because they procrastinate and they put it off. There's never a perfect time. Pop yourself in, have a little chat with people, see how you feel, have an induction with a gym or maybe a trainer, see how you feel, and just go from there, because it's never an ideal time to do anything. Sometimes you just need to take a leap of faith and put your best foot forward. And, you know, what's the worst that can happen? So I definitely think, anyone, just come in, try the best, and just go from there, and just never give up. If it's something you want to do, do it. Follow your dream.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Dean, thank you very much for the time this morning.
It's been fun.
it is such a positive place. I'm the door keeps opening because there's people coming in, getting active. So we will wrap it up there. But thank you.
That's brilliant. Thanks, Dan. Thank you, mate. Thank you.